Live from the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, the only local show taking a principled stand on the issues of the day.
This is how it happens. It's the natural process of things.
The view of the entrenched is predictable, but it's also erroneous.
With Sean Seacrest.
We have an addiction in this country, not only to government welfare and government handouts, but more fundamentally, to other people's money.
And Quaid.
Again, you're dancing with government.
This is the Morning Meeting.
You cannot continue to advocate for status quo when status quo has run the ship aground.
On Talk Radio 930, WTAD.
The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrest, Quaid alongside you. Somebody's college scholarship has apparently been pulled. Good thing he ran out of eligibility about 26 years ago. Democrats get their turn at the Illinois State Fair. Is it a threat if you actually follow through on it? Who doesn't want your stinking humanity and your chance to work for NASA? I'm not, and those aren't all related.
My chance,
Quaid.
Or are you talking about yourself?
I don't know if you have the appropriate advanced degree, or you're not a tinkerer by nature. You're not the kind of guy who's like out in the garage trying to sort of ad hoc build something out of spare parts.
No, I'm not. No,
that's just not in your makeup. So we'll see whether or not you fall under that window that could have you working with the most esteemable of, I believe, government arms, NASA, in the future. We'll get to that before the show wraps up today. Also, Aaron Baker, he'll join us from the Missouri State Fair Governor's Ham Breakfast this morning, where he described the scene to me as political hand-to-hand combat.
Now, you've been at that breakfast before.
Yes, I have, when I was working, covering that same ground that he is on now. So we'll have Aaron Baker coming up in just about a half an hour here on the Morning Meeting. It is our pleasure now to welcome back to the show James Hearson as our guest this morning. You can see his writing at jameshearson.com. Well known as a New York Times, a best-selling author, media analyst, and law professor. And it's a recent blog post at jameshearson.com that has him on our radar again today. James, good morning and welcome back to the show. We appreciate the time.
Oh, great to be with you.
So you have the latest post up at jameshearson.com, and this got Quaid and I talking. And for some who would look at us and say, well, that's just another case of conservative sour grapes, someone now with your weight on the subject has weighed in with the title, Mainstream Media No Longer Even Faking Objectivity, thus opening up the conversation for media bias when it comes to this presidential race coverage. It is good to find a fellow believer. Let me just say that, because so many people want to look at you like, oh, you just have an axe to grind by saying that. And now that we recognize there are enough of us who are hopefully intelligent people in this conversation, it's become apparent that this is really the case. What led you to jump off and write this?
Well, I at one time in my life taught a course. Now, to say the title of this course sounds strange, it was in media ethics. I was teaching people who were studying journalism, and that objectivity is the primary ethic of people in the news media. When you think about the First Amendment does not benefit reporters. It does not benefit the press. The beneficiaries of the First Amendment are we, the people, are us. We have the right to know. That's what the First Amendment free press is about, that portion of the First Amendment. And the right to know means undistorted, unvarnished relaying of information, which is what the press originally has stood for. But we've known for years that there's been a bias in the media, not a conspiracy in my view, but kind of like what Bernie Goldberg describes, is that it just turns out that the people who work in the industry, in the mainstream media, pretty much share the same goals. They live in urban areas, they go to the same parties, and they believe the same things, and it happens to be left of center. And that's what resonates with them. But now the media has gone far beyond bias. This is not just media bias. This is media advocacy. This is media being in the tank for one side. And that's what we're seeing. And they're justifying it. Cheryl Atkinson, the reporter that used to work for CBS, was being interviewed by Newsmax TV, Newsmax being a company that I write for, and talked about being at a big gathering of journalists in Washington, D.C., where a bureau chief who basically is in charge of reporters made a speech telling them to make sure Donald Trump does not get elected, which there was resounding applause. Now, that's a forbidden discussion at an official press function. And what this bureau chief is advocating is reporters going outside of their role. But then we have this article, and much talked about, Jim Rutenberg wrote in the New York Times, where essentially stripping away all the frilly words, Rutenberg is saying, you don't have to be objective this time. Reporters don't have to be objective because of who Donald Trump is. He's so bad. He's a racist, sexist. Of course, they've said that about every Republican candidate, but this time it's gone beyond the pale because of this guy, who they essentially say the same things they said about Ronald Reagan, actually. But it is okay to jettison media ethics, to get rid of objectivity. And then we could go on. I mean, I thought as I wrote the article, I could write a book, which many people have, just citing all of the examples of ridiculous bias. But the one that got me, and it's on, you know, when you mentioned the blog post, it's the picture of Wolf Blitzer on CNN mm-hmm. discussing a statement that Donald Trump made. And the statement was that Barack Obama is the founder of ISIS.
Yeah.
Trump said that, I think, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were the founders of ISIS. And they put up a chyron, and on the chyron they say, Trump calls Obama founder of ISIS. Then they put in parenthesis, he's not. Now, first of all, there's no reasonable person that would listen to that statement and take it literally other than the editorial staff of the CNN. And Hillary Clinton called Donald Trump the chief recruiter for ISIS, the recruiting sergeant, she said. And they didn't see the need to say to people, he's not. Because in that case, they gave her the benefit of the doubt and said, we don't need to fact check because this isn't literal. So it's those kinds of things. And then, of course, if CNN joins other media and gets into the business of fact checking, which has caused their ratings to plummet, they decide only to fact-check one side and to fact-check statements that are clearly not meant to be taken literally. But they don't fact-check Hillary Clinton's statements in a supposed serious interview where she blatantly states lies, claiming that she told the FBI the truth, that her answers to questions were true regarding the nature of the classified information on her email server. When anyone, it doesn't take any effort to see that those aren't true. CNN never had fact-checking chyrons for that. And that's just looking at CNN, who did people are looking for Trump to do a pivot. CNN, along with the other media, did a pivot that was unbelievable after the race between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton was decided. The media decided then to essentially become a contributor in kind, violating federal election laws, and be part of the Hillary Clinton campaign.
James Hearson, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. So what is it about Donald Trump, as opposed to previous Republican nominees, that has somebody like Jim Rutenberg excusing unethical behavior, or I guess encouraging unethical behavior from journalists?
Well, I don't know what's in his head in particular, but I think part of the reason there's this kind of, it's almost like I heard somebody call it, they used to call the left's reaction to George W. Bush, Bush derangement syndrome. Mm-hmm. Well, and they call this Trump derangement syndrome. I think part of it has to do with the fact that he's an outsider, with the fact that he practically dismantled the Republican establishment in the primary, and that there's a, literally an industry that the media is part of that feels threatened. They feel that their bacon is threatened, so to speak. That's the only distinction I can find, other than the fact that he is flamboyant and that he did talk about controlling the borders, and that is, it's very easy to characterize that kind of talk as racist, as the mainstream media has done. But as I said, they would have done that. By the way, if anyone, if Mother Teresa was the nominee of the Republican Party, the left would label her as racist, sexist, hateful, and a xenophobe. I mean, because that's what they do. That's their playbook. But the level of antipathy towards Trump is at a super high level, and it wasn't there. This guy's been on, it been in the public square for 14 years as part of a hit television show, and there wasn't a single word about racism. He was a guest on Oprah's show. She never called him a racist. It's when he got in the political arena and when he has the nerve to possibly threaten Hillary Clinton with losing her coronation. That's an unforgivable sin.
James Hearson with us this morning on The Morning Meeting, New York Times bestselling author and the author of The Left Coast Report, the weekly column. You can check that out as well. James, I've got a couple that I've pulled from recent events that I think illustrate the media's not only loathing for Trump, but their bias when it comes to political objectives as well, because these would normally touch many of the liberal hot-button issues. You have Kellyanne Conway yesterday became the first female to ever run a GOP presidential campaign. This would be celebrated if she were championing someone who aligned with their liberal beliefs. But instead, they just sort of, out of the side of their mouth, passed along that she had been promoted in the Trump camp and left it at that. You have Chris Matthews telling viewers to get excited about Hillary or don't vote. You want to talk about throwing your hat into the ring. And then, just with the Olympics going on in Rio, you have a couple of ladies who have won medals for the U.S. Kim Rhode has won medals in six consecutive Olympics in the rifle events. And then the young female college student from West Virginia, I forget her name, won the first gold of the Olympics in air pistol. These are females who are achieving and would normally be highlighted, but they're on the wrong side of the gun issue in this case. So the media has just decided that they are unworthy of their attention. It's been interesting watching this bias sort of play out.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's been there, as I said, you know, especially when you talk about things like the gun issue. The media refuses to cover any positive story where citizens prevent crimes with firearms, which happen on a regular basis thanks to the social media. It still gets out, though. And what you talked about Kellyanne Conway. I found it amazing, in addition to not celebrating as they should, a female, as the left would normally, the feminists would celebrate a female getting that post, but also the way they have all of a sudden taken Steve Bannon, who I know personally, and characterized him as dangerous, far right-wing radical, a sign that Trump will continue to, go off the rails and all this other stuff. Steve Bannon being basically the person that's been running the Breitbart websites for the last few years. He's known as a conservative. He's made documentaries. But all of a sudden, the hyperbole now focuses on him as if he's some out-of-the-mainstream fire breather. This is a guy who's a former Goldman Sachs investment banker. And has is just a very savvy businessman and has good political instincts and has become basically comfortable and friends with Donald Trump. And admittedly, the Breitbart has made no bones about it. Their website has been biased the other way, mainly to try to counter all the bias that's out there. The online communities of Breitbart, Drudge, and then some others have attempted to counter what has been almost an insane reaction in the mainstream media, which has caused them, by the way, to put out dubious polls. And this is, they've put out polls where they've oversampled Democrats. They've changed the rhetoric. I mean, I think if I say to you this phrase, well, nobody thinks about elections till after Labor Day, so we don't really even worry about where the polls are. Does that sound familiar to you?
Absolutely.
That, we heard that every presidential cycle for our whole life, and nobody says it now, because the media narrative is that this is over, that this is done. As a matter of fact, they're using electoral maps today to show that Hillary has the electoral count, blah, 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 it's over. And my theory on that is it shocked the media and it shocked Hillary Clinton's people when it was reported that in July Trump had raised $80 million, all from small donors, much like Bernie Sanders did. And they want to shut that down. And the best way to shut it down is to create a kind of a feeling of despondency, that this is all over. Don't bother writing your $20 check. Don't bother sending money. And that's what they're trying to do, in my opinion, because they want Hillary to maintain this ridiculous fundraising advantage and perhaps force Donald Trump to dip into his own cash, which he already has. But it's transparent, it's blatant, it's wrong, but it is what we're going to see. And it's the playing field for Bannon and Kellyanne Conway and Donald Trump and Paul Manafort. That's what they have to navigate this particular course in order to meet their goal.
James Hearson, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. We talked about how the media seem to think it's their responsibility to defeat Donald Trump on their own before we even get to the general election in November. But with the inclusion, you mentioned Conway, we mentioned Bannon, Roger Ailes on board Trump's campaign now. Is there going to be some media-type kung fu over the next 8-9 weeks or so that will cause the media to get more shrill, more hysterical? And do you believe, with the ethics part thrown to the side, is there a line that they won't cross?
Oh, it doesn't appear that there is a line that they won't cross. Also, you mentioned kung fu. I think of it more as jiu-jitsu. I think that that it will, in fact, be something unprecedented. You know, Donald Trump finds himself in this position. He's made some really great policy speeches that have been pretty much acclaimed by people on the right, and some on the left even, but they're not reported on unless he adds a controversial statement. He knows how to punch through the media using controversial statements. I think the challenge is for the campaign is to use Trump's persona and his ability to go around the media, but do it in a way where they don't give the media too much ammunition to report in a negative way. That is a very challenging thing. The other thing is that they have to use the money they have very wisely and advertise in the battleground states with very effective, well-placed ads. I think in that sense, this team is going to be very formidable. You think of Roger Ailes and Steve Bannon, Kellyanne Conway. This is a very sophisticated messaging group. And so I think they'll come up with and they'll bring in other people and put together. As a matter of fact, they're starting their advertising tomorrow for the first time. They haven't spent any money on advertising. So I think we'll see a lot of the battleground states tightening after the ads begin.
James Hearson, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. JamesHearson.com, New York Times bestselling author. He has The Left Coast Report Weekly and Tales from the Left Coast, the book as well. It has been a bestseller. James, thank you so much for the time and the deep dive here this morning. We've appreciated having you on the show again.
All right. Thanks for having me.
James Hearson, our guest this morning. Coming up, it is Democrat Day at the Illinois State Fair, and we talk to Aaron Baker about all things Missouri as we continue The Morning Meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
This is Mark Levin, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
News of his demise may have come too soon.
I think it did.
I have confirmation that he is among the living.
Resurrected.
I miss you, Rob. It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrest, Quaid alongside you. Democrat Day going on at the Illinois State Fair today. They kicked off with a brunch at the Springfield Hotel. They've got a rally set for the director's lawn at noon on the state fairgrounds. Steve Brown is the spokesman for the Illinois Democrat Party. He says, quote, a unified party with lots of enthusiasm for its candidates is what you're going to see. Now, this is going to be interesting, Quaid, because this is a stage for Tammy Duckworth. She is running hard against Mark Kirk. And then the other one that is statewide and they're showcasing today, Chicago City Clerk Susanna Mendoza is running for comptroller against Leslie Munger. That'll be interesting. Munger didn't run for that statewide office. She was appointed by the governor. So I think that's going to be, comptroller is not a sexy race. But I think it'll be interesting to kind of see how that goes.
I want to talk about Duckworth a little bit because
please.
Here we have this race that all of a sudden we need to rally for Tammy Duckworth, the Democrat days at the Illinois State Fair. I thought that this was a slam dunk for Tammy Duckworth against an incumbent that doesn't have a lot of support from his own, party, from the pundits.
Certainly not the national party.
Not the media around the state. If Tammy Duckworth can't beat Mark Kirk right now, is her political career over before it starts?
Well, yeah,
is she back to just showing up at somebody's school board?
Yeah, that's I understand what you're setting up because the Olympics are in session right now. It's sort of like wanting to be a high jumper and you can't make it over the curb.
We've been talking about how Mark Kirk is this less than stellar candidate, and people moan. We moan and groan about Mark Kirk all the time as Republicans that he doesn't behave as a Republican could.
Well, he's not a conservative, and oftentimes he's not a Republican.
And that Tammy Duckworth was this all of a sudden on the scene, strong contender, made up of all the grits that you need in that position, and that this was a foregone conclusion that Tammy Duckworth was going to roll Mark Kirk, and nobody would be surprised by this anywhere in the state of Illinois. And now we got a rally. We got to get everybody fired up for her at Democrat Day. I mean, this is the place where we pick a couple of races and we highlight them because we really need to get it done there. And all of a sudden you start saying, well, wait a minute. Is this not what we've been told it was? Is Tammy Duck? I know that she's got some legal issues going on, but is she not the fait accompli that we've been told? And if she isn't, if she can't beat a damaged Mark Kirk, what? How bad is that?
Maybe they just float some information to the Kirk camp that she's running for president and he switches his vote to her. Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategy, live from the Governor's Breakfast at the Missouri State Fairgrounds, coming up next on The Morning Meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
I'm just glad that wasn't the final question of the $64,000 period. I would have never gotten Maxwell on that road.
No, I don't, nobody would have. Except Aaron Baker.
Except, that's why we have him on the show. It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. He is off of water and onto dry land at the, as he called it this morning as we were communicating, the hand-to-hand political combat of the governor's breakfast at the Missouri State Fair. Quaid and I were just running over the era in which I was covering that. I had a Carnahan-Wilson run there in the late 90s into 2000. How'd you find it this morning, Aaron?
There was a huge crowd, sold out on tickets this year. And every year when you think Democrats won't have a chance or we'll have fewer candidates there, once we got past the Ike Skelton days, Democrats were there in full force at the State Fair Ham Breakfast. And Republicans were there, too, and every statewide candidate was there, and really a Southern-style event. It's a country-cured ham breakfast, and all the politicians show up and shake hands and cheer each other on, and it's quite an event. If you've been there, you know what that's like.
Should I be picturing you wearing seersucker, then?
You know, it's not like Colonel Sanders-type Southern-style. It's Missouri-style. They do wear seersucker on Thursdays at the state capitol, though, I will add. So,
Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies, our guest this morning as we get to dive into all things Missouri. Did anything surprise you while you're there at the governor's ham breakfast at the Missouri State Fair this morning?
You know, Koster has a lot of credibility with the ag community, and most of the ag groups, if not all, are going to end up endorsing him. And so several Republicans, several Farm Bureau members, several folks that maybe haven't voted for a Democrat for a long time were wearing Chris Koster stickers on their shirts and supporting his campaign. So he's really locked up the ag community, the ag community. That may not reflect what the rural areas will vote by any means, but those ag interest groups are definitely backing Chris Koster, and that's surprising and kind of tough for me to watch here at the State Fair.
Also, the Fraternal Order of Police has gotten behind Chris Koster as well, and doesn't the FOP usually line up behind the Republican candidate?
I wouldn't say that. They're kind of labor, firefighters kind of split on that as well. But Listen, this is the year of the outsider. We saw in the presidential race that endorsements don't matter necessarily, and people are kind of wanting to go to the voting booth and do the opposite of what they've ever done to get the opposite results. So I'm not so sure these endorsements seal the deal for Chris Koster by any means.
Before we end up back on Chris Koster, let's talk about the outsider in Eric Greitens. Greitens trying to pivot his image a bit. He launched a new television ad in the General, and it's a far cry from his gun-toting SEAL days.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a more serious candidate in Eric Greitens. He's a very smart guy. It's not like he's going to be unaware of the policies that are going to help propel him making this race competitive. We have it about at a 2-point difference right now in Missouri after his competitive primary. Republicans really turned out to vote. Voter turnout after the primary was a little down statewide total, but a lot of more people asked for Republican ballots, of course. And really momentum's on the Republican side. So this is a 2-point race right now. And Eric Greitens has a chance to win this.
Aaron Baker, our guest this morning here on the morning meeting. Koster's carving out some ground usually reserved for a more conservative audience. He has sued to protect concealed carry rights at the University of Missouri campus. This guy, I mean, I'm sure he's pursuing his beliefs in his office right now, but the increasing amount of plays that he's making have to be appealing to conservatives in Missouri.
Yes, and just brace yourself. I mean, he's probably going to get the endorsement of NRA. Our Republican candidate's not going to get the endorsement of Missouri Right to Life. This is going to be this endorsement process that the establishment candidates, if they do it well, we have not seen a Democrat candidate do this that will perform this well on traditionally rural groups and Republican groups. So it's going to be a little difficult to watch for a month or so.
Aaron Baker with Axiom Strategies, our guest this morning.
Is there, then you're looking at ground to be made up by Greitens at any one of the 10 debates that Koster has asked for?
Yeah, that's fine. I think Greitens is a fine debater. We'll see what happens on the debate schedule, but I don't think that Greitens should fear debating Koster. Koster's for Medicaid expansion, for special rights and privileges for LGBT community. There are things that Koster just doesn't fit up with us on social values as conservatives. So I think the debate should be a welcome thing.
Lift your head up from your plate and look around the wider arena there. Down ballot, was there any noise made in a competitive race there this morning? Is there one candidate or another who seems to be getting better representation? And by that, you often count your representation in dollars as contributions these days.
Yeah, so the one that really is performing well down ballot is Eric Schmidt for state treasurer. Eric went into this with a huge cash advantage, had no primary opposition, had a lot of supporters here at the fair, and is doing quite well in the general election, taking on Judy Baker, who's the architect of Obamacare in the state. So there's just a huge disparity there. So that's Eric Schmidt for state treasurer. I think he's the one that's probably of all the statewide candidates going to kind of probably have the best margin of any of our folks on the ballot.
You mentioned a hand-to-hand comment at the ham breakfast there. I want to take it back to Schmidt. He wants to take that treasurer policy and turn it into state law vis-a-vis not investing in countries that are considered terrorist outposts. Is that a kind of a bipartisan thing? Is anybody talking about that at the ham breakfast this morning?
Defund Iran and country-cured ham was unfortunately not the theme. It was kind of hard to get. You have to get reporters to, you know, want to interview your guy, and Eric Schmidt's the defund Iran guy, so it's not exactly an ag type of issue. But whenever you talk to rural voters and folks in the rural area, conservatives, not funding Iran with our state's investments is quite popular. So it's something that a lot of people are appreciating his stance on.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because traditionally, historically, you look up at the makeup of our military, it tends to come from the South and from rural communities, and you would think that those sort of military or pseudo-military topics would be further up the ladder, sort of bubbling up toward consciousness, Aaron.
Right, and you know, defund Iran and terrorism, I mean, these are things that are on everyone's minds right now. It's always jobs in the economy, but then, you know, being safe is always second issue to voters. And so it's an important issue and one that he's definitely taken care of.
Bigger topic this morning at the governor's ham breakfast, the USA's performance in the Olympics or the showdown between Trump and Hillary?
You know, there were no Hillary signs at the governor's ham breakfast. And you've got to think that Republican candidates actually in Missouri don't mind being tied to Trump necessarily. His signs are up everywhere. He had volunteers up everywhere at the ham breakfast. Not a single Hillary sign to be had. It would be more likely at the ham breakfast to see a Hillary for prison sign than a Hillary Clinton for president sign.
Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies, our guest this morning here on The Morning Meeting. Quaid has been on a horrible downturn, they show. Every
what?
Guest that we've had on has been able to read his mind on the note that he was making and then sort of spontaneously bring that point up before Quaid can get to it. And he's got the same look on his face right now as Aaron has been successfully reading his mind afar.
I want to talk about the there's a story out of the Post-Dispatch. I think this was earlier today or may have been from yesterday about the race for, what is it, 78th district spot that's being contested. Bruce Franks loses to Penny Hubbard by 90 votes, goes and says essentially, he doesn't complain about voter ID or voter fraud in that way, but the early balloting he's got issue with. Is this now something that we're going to talk about as far as voting issues? Is the early voting as opposed to, you know, having to show ID when you show up at the polls? Mm.
Well, just to be clear, in Missouri, you can go. We have excused absentee voting. So if you are disabled, folks can come to you and help. Maybe help you fill out your ballot, I guess is the right way to say that. Or you can go to your local election authority and fill out a ballot and vote absentee. If you're not going to be in the jurisdiction, if you're not able to get to the polls, you might wonder if, and you can do this in a campaign, ask the local election authority, hey, who are the people that asked for an absentee ballot last time? Get that list and go and talk to those people and ask them to support your candidate. Now, in this case, if statistically Hubbard's support was so high that it did not seem possible, either her supporters were the ones that were going out in the field and helping people who were disabled and unable to get to the polls to fill out that ballot, or she was chasing down the people that always ask for a Republican ballot and or a ballot, and mail it back. She was chasing those people down and encouraging them for a Hubbard vote. That's neither one. Well, the latter's not illegal. If you're obviously helping people fill out a ballot and you're swaying them towards the person, someone, while you're doing that, that is illegal. But it could be that they just had a really good absentee chase program and got it done.
Our guest this morning, Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies. One more thing before we let you go, Aaron. You have formed a sort of tag team to bring to us on this show with Scott Faughn of the Missouri Times. Now, other than the fact that we know Scott's a boot heel guy, and they're usually pretty tough, Quade wants to know just how tough Faughn is, because he's got an issue with a couple of things that he's done on the website, and Quade wants to know if you think he can take him.
I don't think, you know, guys from the boot heel probably don't fight fair.
Exactly.
That's a pretty big guy, Quade. I don't know.
no, it was just what was the headline that he wrote for the ham breakfast? Was it?
You were the one with the problem with it. I don't remember.
It seemed kind of sensationalized, and then I clicked on it, read it, and went, "It's the governor's ham breakfast." There wasn't anything, you know, dark and disturbing or unseemly about it. I'm like, is there more here? But no, it's the governor's ham breakfast.
Not fair to the world that you two know everything about Sedalia, Missouri. It kind of takes the fun out of the ham breakfast stories and everything else, just because you have so much experience there. You know, we can't help that you all know everything about it.
Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies, our guest this morning. Thanks for taking your time out of a busy day at the State Fair,
Derek
Aaron
Wolf for us.
And we appreciate having you here on the morning meeting. Thanks, bud.
You bet. We'll see you next week.
We'll wrap it up coming up next on the morning meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea. The morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
Hi, it's Glenn Beck, and you're listening to the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
Au contraire. It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930, WTAD. Sean Seacrest. Quade just got his singlet on. He's ready to go. Ready to go with Faughn. It's not a threat if you make good on it. Aetna, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, the number one cheerleader for President Obama's administration to throw Obamacare down the throat of the country, has now said, sayonara, we are out. That's right. After they weren't allowed to merge with Humana, they have decided to pull their participation in the Obamacare exchanges, leaving the country without its former number one, as far as participation goes, provider in those exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
Just another foundation stone being ripped away from Obamacare, as it seems now everything we were told about it was a straight lie. And it's just, we're not going to have to repeal and replace. It's falling apart.
Well, it served its purpose. It did what it was supposed to do. The lies got it in place. And then once it was in place, it was there to fail. Now you have to point the finger and blame somebody. Look, Rush, the last couple of days, has been all over this. And
well, our job is to make sure it doesn't go where they want to go, which is British-style
single-payer,
which has been so bad that they've been trying to run away from it and come to a more Americanized version of healthcare.
And this,
pre-Obamacare.
This is the kind of stuff that right now we should be asking Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton about.
This is what the debates need to be about.
Most definitely, because I think each side has to take an opposite position and make the case. And I really believe the American people will come down on the side of choice as opposed on the side of you get what we'll give you, which is single payer.
Well, while your humanity waits on the sideline for that to play out, there's somebody else who doesn't want your stinking humanity either. After years of advertising themselves as a personal car service, Uber is about to dump drivers in favor of self-guided cars. They're going to roll this out in Pittsburgh in the coming days. They spent about $300 million with Volvo to develop a sport utility that will be used as a self-driving taxi. So if you're making some sweet Uber money right now, first of all, thanks for listening online. Secondly, don't get used to it.
And well, A, I think it's fascinating because Uber has people sign up, you know, to be drivers and everything, use these people to establish themselves, make this money, and then they go and invest on driverless cars. I'm going to say bite in the hand that feeds you, but kind of.
Well, especially if you're a technology company. If you're not evolving, you're dying. There is no standing still with the rapid development of technology and the way it works right now.
Okay. I find it fascinating that, you know, at some point in time, if the driverless thing doesn't work out, as we've kind of seen it not at this point, I know it's this mystical, we've been promised driverless cars forever, so we don't have to be responsible human beings. But when that doesn't pan out, why am I getting excited about driving for Uber moving forward if they're just going to turn their back on me?
You may have hit on something right there. Have we been promised driverless cars so that we can be irresponsible human beings? If you desire a driverless car, are you also more likely to desire big government who wants to take care of you cradle to grave?
I would tell you that driverless cars and irresponsibility was promoted as the reason for them. Because people want to get turned up.
Well, yeah, I'd be bored if I'm not driving the car.
But that's...
It's hard for me to ride in the passenger seat across town without wanting to crack a beer. I mean, if I'm not driving, what am I doing?
You're riding?
Yeah, but then I want to be playing with the radio if I'm riding anywhere further than Hannibal, like I have to take the iPad so that I have something to do. I can't sleep when other people drive.
Well, who's taking a nap on the way to Hannibal? It's not that far.
I said if we're going further than Hannibal. All right. It was University Carnegie Mellon got involved with the robotics that Uber's going to use. They're also your competition to earn $1 million from NASA.
That's
right. The space agency announced this week open registration for a new competition aimed at developing, quote, the capabilities of a humanoid robot to help astronauts on their journey to Mars. If you've watched Star Trek The Next Generation, they're looking for a data prototype is what they're looking for here.
Can't we? I mean, data seems awfully evolved.
Looking for a prototype there.
C-3PO.
Early ancestor.
Something like that.
I don't think 3PO. I don't think on a long
droid.
Distance the trip to Mars, there's going to be a lot of call for a universal translator. Droid.
But to me, C-3PO.
Something more functional like an R2 unit would probably be better.
You can
We're
write the software any way you want.
Sci-fi genres right
I know.
Now.
But you can write the software to do anything. I'm just talking about the structure itself is humanoid.
We be more receptive to something that is humanoid?
Yes.
As opposed to like a BB-8 or an R2?
Yes.
I think you're right as well. All right, that's going to do it for us this morning. Craig Robinson, the Iowa Republican, coming up tomorrow and more, all right here on The Morning Meeting.
Join us again tomorrow for the best talk in the tri-states. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.